Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. By ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. And by Hover. Register a domain name with Hover and build your online brand today. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase. This is Ham Nation, episode number 316 for September 6th, 2017. The American Legion and Dr. T live.
Good evening, everybody. You have the dial turned to Ham Nation. It's a show about ham radio, having fun and helping people and all the wonderful things that ham radio does. And this show is going to really bring you some exciting things and some very meaningful things because Gordo is going to be joined by Marty from K9TAL. And K9TAL is the station of the American Legion. And we're going to come back to him. He has some really great news for us. But in the meantime, we're going to be talking to Dr. T. And I have some pine board things to talk to you about. It's just a great show. And wait till you see what George has for you. So let's see. George, are you there tonight? Are you here in the opening? I don't think so. No, we got to wait for George. Okay. But Don, you're there. What's happening? You're safe. All that pie passed you. Is that correct?
Yeah, Harvey was not an issue, and it looks like that Irma is not going to be an issue either, provided that the high-pressure system to our north and the cold front that went through today continues to sweep that out. But, of course, we're keeping all of those in the islands and in Florida and elsewhere along the projected path in our prayers tonight. So by all means, it's amazing. There are three active hurricanes out there. We've got Irma, we've got Katia in the Gulf, which is going to affect Mexico, and then we've got Jose out behind Irma. That's going to be just a fish storm. Won't affect anything but water. So Irma's the bad one. So we're watching out for that. Also, a very, like you said at the top here, a very, very big X-class solar flare in the last 24 hours. And we will get the lowdown from Dr. T live tonight, right after the Newsline segment. Full show, Bob.
Great. Yes. I was on 40 meters a while ago listening, and a couple of guys were talking to Angel. You remember Angel was on with Valerie here a few weeks ago. They visited him down at Arecibo, and this darn storm is right over them, but he was on a cell phone, and he's okay. I have no power at the moment, but everything is okay at the moment. So, boy, we hope everything is good and safe there in Arecibo. And Angel, a lot of you know Angel. He was on the cell phone, said everything's okay right now. So we'll find out more from Dr. T. It's really crazy, but we've had it. I got on 75 this morning with my normal AM net. I thought, my receiver's not working. I changed receivers. What's happening here? Then I finally dawned on me, duh. And we had this big solar flare, and I've never seen it take out 75 meters like that. It was totally dead. But all of that will be coming up. But before we get into all this stuff, Amanda's done there writing with her pencil and typing. Give her some questions. She's watching all of you in the chat room. We're going to head down to Costa Mesa because Gordo has a very, very good interview with Marty. So, Gordo, you and Marty take away.
All right. Well, thanks, Bob. And it's going to be an exciting weekend with that X-class 9.3 solar flare upon us. This weekend won't affect the VHFers. It's the VHF-UHF contest, September 9, 10, and 11. It won't affect the Route 66ers too much. They're going to be out for a whole week. And all you need to do is go on HF or on your local repeaters and dial up anything that ends with 66, and you'll hear either W6A all the way through W6U. No telling who you're going to hear. This weekend is also the New Jersey State Convention, and that's on Sunday in the Gloucester, Gloucester County Amateur Radio Club. W2M is sponsoring that. Boxborough this weekend. Wow. Just in time before that weather hits, Boxborough for 3 days, Massachusetts, Big Ham Fest. And, of course, a real fun one I've been to along with Boxborough is Virginia Beach. Well, let's take a look at all that's been happening with the hurricane down south. And I bring with us Marty Justice, W9WMJ. Marty's been with the American Legion as their chief man for, 34 years? Is that right, Marty?
Yes, sir. But actually, I'm retired after 34 years, and it feels good, Gordo.
Well, that's great. And he now heads up the American Legion Amateur Radio Club. Now, how's that club doing?
Doing great. You know, we were on this show about 2 years ago, and at that time, we were boasting 2,000 members. And today, our membership base sits at 3,200 members. And we're tickled about that. But even more important for us is that about 25 or 30 of our American Legion posts have formed Legion radio clubs in their local post, and a good number of those have established stations on site within the walls of the American Legion post. And that's the kind of the vision that we had for the club to begin with, that it would be a place for the amateur radio to serve the community.
Wow. Well, you've done a lot down there in the Houston area. Now, why is the Legion part of the Gulf Coast effort? You've got Red Cross and Salvation Army and a host of others. What is the Legion's mission?
Well, I'll tell you, Gordo, for a long time, the American Legion has been a strong advocate disaster preparedness and follow-up relief services. Back in 1969, during Hurricane Camille, which hit the Gulf Coast at that time, the American Legion established what we call the National Emergency Fund. And that's a fund that has developed today to provide money to those members of the American Legion and members of the Sons of the American Legion who have been affected by natural disasters, declared natural disasters. And if you happen to be an American Legion member or an SAL member who's affected by the storm, you can get a grant up to $3,000, and posts can get money to help them get back and continue to serve the community as well. And the grants for the posts of the American Legion are up to $10,000.
Wow. Well, that is just terrific, Marty. Now, Marty, what can ham radio operators do? What assistance can we provide for the Legion, and what assistance is the Legion right now providing for Houston?
Well, I tell you, the best thing they can do is pass, and we've asked this of our own members, is to pass along information to those in the devastated areas, whether they're the people who actually have been affected by the storm or those who are overseeing communications there, and let them know that the American Legion has two programs that can help veterans and help members of the American Legion and active duty people. And one is the National Emergency Fund, and the other is temporary financial assistance. And that second one is for active duty personnel and veterans who may not be members of the Legion, but have minor children in the home under age 17.
Wow. Well, isn't that something? You know, high frequency is still an important part of this hurricane watch that Irma is now coming up along the outer islands. 7065 kilohertz for Cuba and 7110 and 7120 for Cuba calls. FEMA is going to be taking over the 60-meter band. And as you know, we share that with NTIA. So if you should hear call signs that are KF2 EMA, they all end with EMA with an F in there, that's FEMA, and give them primary access to our 60-meter 5 channels. Very, very important. And once that hurricane approaches Florida, 7188 is going to be a net for a lot of local traffic, Caribbean on 3815, and, of course, the Maritime Mobile Net on 14300, and the Hurricane Watch Net with WX4NHC at 14.325. So what's the plan for Irma coming up the coast for your Legion personnel?
Very definitely we'll be there, Gordo. You can count on it. You know, at National Headquarters, I mentioned the two programs that are most important from our point of view to provide financial assistance in those areas. But the real work of the American Legion, where the rubber meets the road and where the boots hit the ground, is at the in the community where the local post is. The pictures that you saw up there, you saw people who were bringing others from the community affected by the storm, putting food on their table or in their bellies and clothes on their back and water and providing the needs and health ways for their children. That's where the best work of the American Legion is done, in the communities. And we're proud, so proud of those Blue Cap Legionnaires. And about the need in Texas and Louisiana, there are about 135,000 active duty people in Texas and Louisiana. Another 32,000 Guard and Reserve members who've been energized or brought forward to work in these places. We have 88,000 American Legion members in Texas and Louisiana. We have about 600 posts of the American Legion in that area. 25 or so are right in the Houston area, hit hardest by this storm. So the potential for our ability to help is great there.
Wow. Well, Marty, we congratulate you and all of your Legionnaire members for a great job that they're doing and the big job ahead when Irma finally makes shore. So, Marty, any last words before we go and check with Don to see what his weather is like, which way that next hurricane is coming? Marty?
Sure, Gordo. What I'd like to do is leave you with two pieces of information about contacting the Legion. Is one, through the website legion.org/NEF, November Echo Foxtrot, for information and applications for the NEF program, and a toll-free number, 800-504-4098, to contact the American Legion, any veteran, to see if they're eligible and how much assistance they might be able to get from us here at National Headquarters in Indianapolis.
Well, thank you, Marty, and just stay safe and all of your personnel with Irma now lurking. Thanks so much, Marty. And I want to switch over to Don, and then I know Bob's got more on the pine board, but Don, what's the plan? How are you looking? What's the weather that's either going to push Irma offshore or in the Gulf? We hope not. Don?
It looks like right now there's the Bermuda High is still hanging out over the Atlantic and the Atlantic. And we had a cool front come through today, actually. And there's a high pressure system that's coming down following that. And that will keep Irma away from us. Irma is still expected to rake Florida, if not right over the Florida Peninsula, at least offshore a little bit, hopefully to the east into the Pacific, and that would be a best-case scenario for them and, of course, for us. We're supposed to have beautiful weather all the way through the weekend. And, Marty, thanks for being here. It's still on my list to send that Sons of the American Legion application in. It's laying around here somewhere, and it's on my bucket list of things to do. I know we talked about that last time you were here last year, so we'll get to that eventually. Good to see you again. We'll also get to Dr. Tamitha Scove, and she'll have info on that huge X-class flare. She was on Periscope earlier, had about 20,000 people watching her on that, and she will be here live. And also, she will be hanging out through the end of the show, so if you have any chat room questions for Dr. T, make sure that Amanda sees those. So we'll get to Dr. T next, but first, let's check out the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2079, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, September 6, 2017. Fueled by the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico, Hurricane Harvey became an extremely dangerous Category 4 hurricane when it slammed into the Texas coast around 10 p.m. on Friday, August 25th.
Rockport, which was pretty much ground zero for the hurricane, have absolutely no power, no communications, lots of structure damage.
Mike Urich, KA5CVH, works with Harris County Aries.
From a ham radio standpoint, there's not a whole lot of hams in that general area. I know that DPS, Texas Department of Public Service, that's our state troopers. They are down there en masse.
Harris County has recognized the resources ham radio can bring.
Harris County, Texas, is probably one of the better equipped counties in the country. We have a county Homeland Security Office of Emergency Management that is very supportive of the amateur radio community. We have a absolutely awesome radio station in our Emergency Operations Center, completely funded by the county and supported by them.
The area hams are ready to offer assistance.
when stuff fails, that, hey, call the hams. They can do it.
For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0 DGY.
Recovery will take months, if not years. So how did radio amateurs do during the big solar eclipse last month? We have a report courtesy of Amateur News Weekly.
The 2017 solar eclipse QSOL party is history now, although the final numbers are not yet in. According to SEQP, the special event QSOL party planners, preliminary reports estimate that over 670,000 spots were detected by the reverse beacon network, and over 542,000 spots were reported by the PSK automatic propagation reporter.
Yeah, you too. This is a lot of fun.
All of this data is being compiled by the event coordinator Nathaniel Frizzell, W2NAF of HAM-SCI. Frizzell is an associate research professor at the New Jersey Institute of Technology. Frizzell and others are investigating whether the sudden absence of sunlight during the eclipse had any effect on ham radio propagation. Reporting for Amateur News Weekly, this is Jack Parker, W8ISH.
And the amazing stories of ham radio-related eclipse experimentation keep coming in.
You may remember Winston Young, KI7CSK, proud father of daughters Rebecca and Kimberly. The girls' successful weather balloon launch project landed them at the White House in 2015 for the National Science Fair. Well, the Seattle siblings were at it again during the recent solar eclipse. Eclipse Day found them in Wyoming to once again launch their balloon, this time into the eclipse shadow. They had hoped to gather camera images from the stratosphere just as the moon's passage over the sun created that celebrated moment of total darkness. They were also conducting a solar panel experiment. The mission, however, was only partially successful. The girls told GeekWire that the onboard cameras had shut down due partially to the cold temperatures encountered at such high altitudes. Their onboard solar panel experiment also hit an obstacle. They had hoped to determine how an eclipse would affect power generation, but that study was killed by a loose wire. The balloon did reach an altitude of 96,371 feet, and eventually the payload landed 30 miles away in Nebraska, parachuting safely to its mission's conclusion. The balloon's next stop is an exhibit in Seattle's Museum of History and Industry. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, Jack Parker, W8ISH, Mike Askins, KE5CXP, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3, we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
Speaking of the giant WTWW, hello to all you folks out there listening tonight on 5085 and 12.105 on WTWW. If you have any email for the station, you can send that to email at WTWW.us, and Ted would love to hear from you. Let's hear now from Dr. Tamitha Scove live tonight, a special treat. Hello, Dr. T. Good to see you on here. You had a huge X-class flare. What's going on with that?
Yes, it's insane what the sun has been doing just over the past week or so. We have had more M-class flares than you can shake a stick at. The sun has just really dialed it up a notch. We have a couple X-class flares that happened today, including the largest flare of this solar cycle. So this has spawned a couple solar storms. One of them is actually hitting right now. It's just starting. So if anybody's noticing some strangeness on the bands, especially if it's the sun has already gone down or if they're close to midnight, trust me, that's due to this solar storm that's now hitting, because it always makes it worse on the dusk side and on the night side. So this is the bad boy right here. This is region 2673. It started forming over here when it was just rotating kind of into view. And it's just been firing off rapid fire flares. We've been seeing, that's the big one right there. That was an X9.3. We've been basically above the M floor level for like 4 days. So no wonder the bands are horrible. You can't hear through any of this mess. We've been getting type 2 radio bursts. That's probably what took out, I think, Don, you were talking earlier, you didn't know what would take out 75 meters. That was probably it. It was that type 2 radio burst from that big flare right there. We do have a solar storm that was launched center disk, as well as one that was launched just with that big flare. We thought that one might actually miss us, but it's so big and so massive, it's actually going to hit us. So I'll get into that, the 5 days here in just a second. But let me show you. This is kind of what you're dealing with. Right here, this is the GOES X-ray flux. It's kind of a proxy for solar flux, your F10.7, but it definitely shows you where your radio blackouts are occurring. Anything above this line right here is all M-class level. So you can see just in the past 3 days, one, two, three, four, the four M-class flares plus two X-class flares. And there were flares going on before this. So we're just sitting at the M-flare level almost all the time, it seems, over the past few days. So the bands are going to be horrible. I know this is awful timing because of Harvey and the devastation there, and now Irma, which is, you know, threatening the coast. So you're just going to have to deal with it, especially on the day side. That's where these radio blackouts cause problems. And then on the night side, now you're going to have to deal with the solar storm that's hitting because of that. Let me switch really quickly to a map of the world. This is the DRAP model. This shows the D layer of the ionosphere. It kind of gives you an idea of how horribly impacted we all are. What you're seeing in this region here, this is the solar flare, remnants of the solar flare where the daytime is right now. So, you know, we're getting down to nighttime here. So no, we're not going to see that. This mess here, all this red that you see, that is from two, not one, but two solar radiation storms that are ongoing. The first one hit a few days ago when that first solar storm was launched. It was intensified by this X9.3 flare that's now launched even more energetic particles. And these are slamming the upper atmosphere at high latitudes. So this is going to impact your ham radio bands. You're going to hear even more noise on the bands. And if you're at high latitudes in Canada or whatever, that type of thing is just going to make things pretty much impossible to deal with. Also, it's you know, there's a lot of other issues for things like GPS. So I know there's a lot of planes and things that are flying through the hurricanes right now and doing a lot of robotic drone missions and stuff like that, trying to gather data. Those drones may have issues because of GPS problems due to all of this solar noise. And here's the remnant of that X-class flare. You can see we're barely now below the M-flare levels with still little bits and whistles here popping above the M-flare floor. So when that happens, of course, the bands get bad again. So, you know, you're just going to have to keep dealing with this. And, you know, I don't know what else to tell you. It's going to be over the next couple days. And then when the second of the solar storm hits, that should be late on the 8th. And it's going to cause some super big problems. As a matter of fact, if you pull up the 5-day outlook, I think it's called SCOV2. Victor, if you'd be so kind to pull that up, then I'll show you these guys the 5-day report. Look at that. Do you see how red that is? I mean, it's just massively red. The first storm is going to be hitting on the 7th, or, you know, it's hitting now, basically. That's supposed to be a moderate level storm. So NOAA's giving us major storm conditions, both at high latitudes and mid latitudes. The second storm is going to be hitting late on the 8th into the 9th. So again, and it's a major storm. So again, we're getting hammered both at high latitudes and mid latitudes. We won't see anything settling down as far as storm conditions are concerned until easily through the weekend. So this is going to wreak havoc for you guys. I'm so sorry to give you the bad news. Of course, aurora photographers are cheering, you know, and I'm obviously very torn. Now, flip to the SCOV1, and that will tell us the radiation storm issues that we're having. Thank you. Okay, so this is our solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook. The nice thing, I'll give you the good news first. The nice thing is that the solar flux levels are very high. We're back to almost solar maximum in terms of flux levels, so no problem for propagation on the bands. Bad problem is, of course, there's no bands to propagate on. You've got so many M-class flares and now a 50% chance of X-class flares easily over the next 4 days, or 3 days at least, until this region, 2673, that bad boy, rotates behind the west limb. So you're going to be dealing with that. Plus, we have that S2 level radiation storm. It's popped back up to S2 level because we just hit that solar storm is just now passing over Earth. Those levels will die down to the S1 level pretty soon here within the next day or so, but will probably remain elevated all the way through the weekend. So no good news when it comes to the radiation storms either. And that's the solar report.
Excellent stuff, Tamitha. Thanks a lot. We have a question from the chat room, and you will be around until the end of the show for chat room questions. So if you have those, be sure and get them into to Amanda. She's watching that. But we have one from the other side of the world. ZL1KFM Kevin down in New Zealand wants to know if I can ask you what website the map is from. I'm assuming it's the map with the red on the northern and southern edges there. What do you have a website that? Yeah, do you have a website that that's from?
Yes, this is actually the from NOAA SWPC, so the Space Weather Prediction Center at NOAA, and I think it's NOAA.SWPC.gov. I'm not exactly sure, but if you Google NOAA, N-O-A-A, and SWPC, you will get their website, and you look for the model called DRAP, literally the letter D-R-A-P, and that's this model right here. And it just shows the ionosphere changing on the in the D layer. It's not good for anything else, but it's a pretty good proxy when we see solar flares and where the extent of the ionization is, especially for particle radiation storms. Kind of gives us a good idea how bad things are being impacted and how long they're going to last.
Very good. And I see Eric has put that URL in the chat room, so it is in there now. And Chip. K9MIT has put it in there as well, so we have that answered. Thanks a lot, Dr. T. We appreciate you. And one more quick question. This X9.3, how does that compare to what would bring a Carrington event to Earth?
Well, the Carrington event, it was hard to measure, so we didn't really have the same type of equipment back in the 1800s. That was guesstimated at an X45. And since this is the flare scales are like Richter scales, they're logarithmic. So they can imagine how much larger an X45 is from an X9. So we're nowhere near a Carrington event. And the Carrington event really doesn't even apply to the flare. It applies to the solar storm that's launched with the flare. In this case, neither of these storms that are hitting us are going to be Carrington. They're not Carrington class. They're much slower than that. But they're still going to be extremely impactful. And the issue that we have is just like anything else, it's not always the intensity of the storm, it's the duration. And the fact that we have back-to-back moderate-level storms lasting over potentially 4 days, that could be even more destructive than a larger storm that lasts for a very short while. So I guarantee you the national grids are very aware of these storms, and they will start putting in mitigating procedures starting at what we call the G2 class. So they will be on it, working their reactive power, trying to calm things down and taking things offline and, you know, doing what they can to kind of equate the power, get the power levels stable, because that's the big deal there. But no, it's not a Carrington class, and this won't give us any issues, although I wouldn't be surprised if anyone wants to climb up on their rig, they could get shocked for their antennas. I've actually heard people that have had that type of problem happen.
Wow. Well, one final note from the chat room, and of course you will be back towards the end of the show to answer chat room questions. But I thought this pretty much summed it up. K6LAR Ed says, "Thanks, Dr. T. Who would have thought space weather could be so entertaining?" The best. And we completely agree with that. We're so proud that you're on our team, and we thank you so much, especially for coming on live and sharing that insight. And we'll get back to you as we get towards the end of the show with the chat room. But first, let's talk a little bit about DX Engineering. Thanks, Tamitha. We appreciate you. As we enter the ham radio contesting season, DX Engineering has some amazing new offerings to keep your station right on the edge. Give you the edge, as well as protecting your investment. And that's important. Look for some serious signal boost. Check out the ACOM 2100. It's a 1500-watt legal limit HF linear amp. Gives you QRO operation and a manually tuned RF amp with several automatic protection circuits. It's designed to safely withstand up to 400 watts of reflected power and up to 100 milliseconds duration of drive spikes. The ACOM 2100 lets you almost instantaneously change between three antennas. Has a broadband input matching that presents the proper load to the transceiver over the entire spectrum, 1.8 to 54 megahertz, 160 to 6 meters. The true resistance indicator lets you quickly and precisely tune the final amp stage. Checking amplifier status is a breeze with a high brightness OLED display on the ACOM 2100. Now, if you're looking for a desk microphone, Enrad has a new line of quality desk mics giving you performance and value for hams at every level. Each of the five InRed microphones has a unique unidirectional cardioid element, unique audio characteristics to fit every operator's voice, radio, and preferences. You can choose from models that provide full-range studio sound, DXing, and contesting punch, or both. Whichever you select, you'll get a mic designed to deliver great-sounding, crystal-clear voice audio for every one of your transceivers. They all come with a 3-pin XLR to 1/8-inch adapter cable for easy hookup with the appropriate radio adapter. An InRad single-stage microphone design will look great in your shack as well. So, or a stage style, rather. InRed stage style microphone design looks great in your shack. Surge arresters, you got to have that. As Dr. T said, even with these solar conditions, it's not just lightning. You can actually get some surges from these solar particles and things. DX Engineering's new surge arresters provide amateur radio stations with the same level of protection that broadcast and government systems have relied on for 50 years. They're multi-strike capable coaxial lightning protectors, and they're for use on antenna systems operating on all frequencies from 1.5 to 700 megahertz. They can handle 2 kilowatts CCS RF on HF and 50 megahertz antenna feed lines under 3 to 1 SWR. They're DC blocked, feature a specially configured high-speed gas tube design that passes on RF frequencies. You can find all this at dxengineering.com. And you know DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders placed before 10 p.m. Eastern time are shipped the same day. With proven products and expert advice, DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. Request your catalog. Yes, they still do catalogs. Live, actual, well, not live. I mean, they're dead trees, but they're paper. And you can hold them in your hands just like the old Sears and Roebuck catalog. But it's got all new stuff in it. But I digress. Request your catalog that you can hold in your hand or shop online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at dxengineering.com. Amazing people, the best products, and the smartest people I think I know in ham radio. Pretty much dxengineering.com/hamnation. Another smart guy. In fact, he's so smart they made him a doctor. It's Bob in the Pine Board.
Thank you very much. How blessed is amateur radio to have Dr. Tamitha with us every week. There's lots and lots of places you can go on the internet to try and get some news and whatever. Nobody has the information. My gosh, look at the stuff she's bringing to us. So be sure and pass this on to your friends. You don't want to miss her every week. Before I get started, this is the week Gordo told you about. Right here in Springfield, our call is W6R. I will be on the air all week. I won't be here this weekend, the 2 days, but I'll be on all next week. So look for me, and I will be using W6R along with a whole bunch of other people. Springfield is the birthplace of the Route 66 downtown, and they've just restored the building that the telex, it was really a telegram, was made up and sent to Washington to say it's not going to be called Route 40. It's going to be called Route 66 because they weren't sure what they were going to do with it. So there you are. Anyway, we're going to get on to Pine Board. There's so much going on. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. And I appreciate everybody that's really gotten involved in this project. And there are a bunch of you. And I hope that you continue on here because we're going to have more things to do. Here's a really great picture I got. This is N4DH's Pine Board. But wait a minute. It's not on Pine Board. He had some parts and pieces, and he did it on a chassis, which absolutely can be done. It's more difficult because you have to do a lot of metal work, but that was his preamp and his power supply. However, he is building the transmitter now, and the transmitter is that's how he lays it out. We showed you it's the best way to do it is lay the parts out, use the drawing that Gene's done for you, how you place things and where they go, then you can mount the parts, away you go. So that's another aspect of how you can build the Pine Board. It doesn't have to be on Pine Board. It can be in regular good old metal. Now, I've had a lot of requests for the parts list, and we've talked about this. Now, there is a complete listing on our site, and we put it there just so it would be easy. We didn't have to go out and spend a bunch of money to buy another site and get confused. Just go to Heil Sound, page through all of the top, and down at the bottom is a complete listing, including the videos. And you don't have to page through the whole hour and a half show. Victor has been so kind to go in and put just the little 10-minute segments or whatever of each week. And you'll see all of that on HeilSound.com, down at the bottom. All of these parts lists and drawings are there. Now, notice in this particular shot that I have up here, down in the bottom is a part number. That part number is from Amateur Electronic Supply. And what happens there, if you go to their website, I always like to call people. Is it just because I'm old? No, it's because I can really get service. If something's not there, someone, you can get instant messaging back and forth with a telephone. You know, that's the thing, has two wires. Sometimes you can use it. I think they call it an iPhone. Anyway, call them. And there's the part number, P, that means part, dash BH for Bob Heil, Pine Board AM transmitter. See, that's how you can remember. P, BH, PB, AMT. You order that, you get all the parts. It's all in one kit. And they can help you with all that. But you can order just the power supply. You can order just the preamp. And that's coming from Antique Electronic Supply. You want to do your tubes the best place. Antique sells a few tubes, but really the cost-effective and the best place I've found is tubesandmore.com. That's their site, I'm sorry, is vacuumtubes.com. You can get it either place. But the vacuumtubes.com, they have more variety and they're a little bit less expensive. So you might want to look at vacuumtubes.com for your tubes. Crystals, no problem. Bry's down there, B-R-Y is his name, A-F-4-K. He's got all the crystals. Now, we've had a little bit of communication with people about the choke. There is a choke. 2.5 millihenry choke that people, Antique Electronic Supply quit carrying it. I don't know why they quit carrying it. I can't answer that. But if you go down to online components, I called them the other day and they have them. So you can get your 2.5 millihenry choke there. And I'll be watching that to make sure that that maintains it. It's out there. You just got to go to other parts suppliers. They don't do a lot of the other parts, but you can find that part there. So that'll work for you. And what I'm working on right now, and I've had some communications with some of you about this. Gene has worked on it. Richard has worked on it. And we're coming up pretty close to what we'll do. I'll try to have it on maybe next week. We'll see how that goes. And that's going to be, how do you turn this thing on and off? Where's the push-to-talk switch? Well, there is my push-to-talk switch. But what we're going to do is make that a double pole switch. It'll have three more contacts on the back. And one side of it will turn to B plus on. That's what I'm using now. But I switch the antenna and I mute the receiver with another relay on a foot switch. But we're going to try to make it all inclusive to that one switch, or maybe a push to talk switch, hand switch, or push to talk on the floor, a foot switch. But that's coming down the line as to what we're going to do with that. And the coil, we've had a few people ask about this coil. Once again, call, C-A-L, call. Remember these things, you know, about these things right here. Pick it up and call MFJ and ask for Richard. If you really want to get to the source, it's Richard. He'll get you all fixed up. I don't know. There was some confusion. It was in the parts list for a while, and then it isn't, whatever. Anyway, call them. And that is their coil from their 811 transmitter. it's a little longer, you want to cut it off to 41 turns. And I think it's 14 turns back in. You push one of the elements down a little bit, and you can put a clip on it and so on. And we've talked about this before. I think there's videos on that too. That is my 40 meter band switch. All you do is put a 40 meter crystal that you get from Bry AF4K. Do the little switch over here and away you go. Now, I showed you last week or week before a band switch. That's how it works. It's that simple. When you see a transmitter with a band switch, that's all they're doing. They're just shorting out pieces of the coil for other bands. No, this is not going to work on 20 meters. No, it's not going to work on 10 meters. The reason is we would need multipliers. Right now, the crystal oscillator, the 6AG7, you'd have to really get some other stages in here to take that 7 meg crystal and multiply it up to 20 meters. And it wouldn't be that crystal, it would be something different. But anyway, no, we're not going to do that. We could build a separate transmitter, but it'd be all different components and a little bit more difficult because it's going to be harder to tame. We wanted to do things that simple, and I'm so thrilled that so many of you have come to me and you're on the air. It's just so refreshing that, hey, we did this and you did this. That's the cool part. You did this and you'll learn some things, and we're going to learn a lot more as we go on, because I have some plans. We're going to build a final, working on that right now. Probably be a 1625, which is a 120807. Might do it with a 6146. That's my favorite tube, is a 6146, but a little expensive. So we might do both of them, and you can choose whatever you want. But it's gonna take that few watts out of this baby, and it's going to put 35, 40 watts on the antenna. But next week, what we're going to do is we're going to show you how to unplug the 6X5 rectifier and take a 8-pin octal, put a bridge rectifier. Those are solid-state diodes. You could do the four diodes, but they make little bridges. It's really simple. And four legs, solder it in, plug it in. You will have 300 and maybe 50 volts. What's that going to do? Well, it makes you more aware. And we talk about all the time, you're dealing with high voltage. And for all you doom and gloomers, we want to teach people to respect high voltage. I don't care if it's 12 volts or 112 volts or 1200 volts. Respect it. That's all we try to teach here. Respect the voltage. But when you get that voltage up above 300 volts, you're now going to have 5 watts out. And it really makes a big difference. We do it in the morning on our AM. That's not this morning, Dr. T. Guess what? We couldn't talk. We couldn't hear anything on 75 meters this morning, but finally came around. And that was quite something to come in here in the morning and turn all this stuff on. Whoa, I switched receivers. I thought, what's going on? Where's all my AM buddies? Go to over on the other, on the 7851 ICOM. Nothing there. I'm going, oh no, did my antenna fall down? Nope. I went to 40 meters and a little bit, 20 meters was away. So anyway, it's all about that ionosphere. But we've got some things coming for you, and being able to have anywhere above 300 volts will give you a good 5 watts. Now we can really do something and drive some amplifiers and get some righteous power. But you can do an awful lot. Every Monday at 8:30 in the morning, 3885 is the peanut whistle net. And for a half an hour, you cannot get on that frequency. Well, you can, but we wouldn't like you to do this unless you're running less than 30 watts or whatever. Anyway, it's all low powered. That is the inspiration for me some years ago when I heard Richard W0BVT. He was on his pine board. So there you are. And in closing, I'm going to give you these one more time because I know you're coming up with these questions, and we want to try to give you the answers. There are the parts numbers. We talked about it a minute ago from Antique Electronic Supply. Those are the parts for the transmitter only and for the preamp. And if you want the whole works, it's PBH and the PAMT, PB, Pine Board, AMT. So there you go. And in closing, I have to wave my flag a little bit because next Thursday, Friday, I'm all right, a week from this coming, in Tulsa, I'm going down and we're going to play a good old theater organ concert. And there's going to be quite a few hams. I've heard from quite a few of them. And I'm looking forward to this. This will be, I don't know, second or third time that I've been there to do a concert over the years. They have a wonderful installation there. So there you are. There's the address. It's in Tulsa at the Tulsa Technology Center in Broken Arrow. And we're looking forward to that September the 15th at 7 p.m. So join us. We're going to have fun and play some good old theater organ music, good music of the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. I even got a Beatles tune I'm working on. So there you go. The main thing is we'll have fun. And it'll be good to see all of the people that show up. And in the meantime, we're going to learn some more. I mean, really learn something. So all you guys that think you need 100-foot towers and 4.5 acres for antennas, got news for you. George is going to tell you all about it.
It's September. Time to plan ahead. What is your emergency plan? September is Emergency Preparedness Month. Now is the time to review your communications plan and make sure your ICOM equipment is ready to go for any air, land, and sea situation. Communicate with the touch of your fingertips. Perfect for small spaces, the IC7100 all-mode transceiver is the ideal D-Star option to add to your communications plan. Angled control head and touchscreen for quick, intuitive operation. Large internal speaker for clear digital audio, and it's perfect for multi-band and all-mode communications. A compact and smart design, the ID4100A is a D-Star mobile with big rig features. Its intuitive interface, variety of operating modes, and Bluetooth capability make this the preferred D-Star option during an emergency. Integrated GPS receiver, new dot matrix display for enhanced DR mode and GPS information, terminal mode and access point mode, applications for iOS and Android devices, and a micro SD card slot for voice and data storage. Take the rugged IC2730A dual-band transceiver wherever you may be. Its large LCD screen, easy-controlled mounting and Bluetooth capability make it ideal for the ham on the go. VHF-VHF or UHF-UHF simultaneous receive. 50 watts of output on both VHF and UHF and optional VS3 Bluetooth headset. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win. After each episode of Ham Nation, go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. Register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you could win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And we actually have a winner for August. The winner of an ID4100A dual-band transceiver is Timothy AF7YT. Congratulations, Timothy. ICOM will be getting that right out to you. And I'll tell you what, that was so much fun. Let's do it again for September. We'll give away an ICOM ID4100A dual-band transceiver, the entry-level D-Star mobile with big rig features, built-in GPS receiver, full dot matrix display, micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, and it has an available Android and iOS applications. Of course, it does both analog and D-Star. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. After this and each episode of Ham Nation, register to win, sign up, good luck, And don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And one other radio we're going to be giving away with ICOM. And this is going to be amateurlogic.tv/contest. You can get all the details there. We're giving away an IC7300, the great HF software-defined radio that ICOM came out with a little over a year ago now. It's really been popular. We've got one we're giving away thanks to ICOM, but we're going to put a couple more things with it here. We've also got an MFJ compact 30-amp switching power supply. This is actually my power supply here. You can't have this one. We'll get MFJ to send you one direct, but I use that for field day. And anytime I just need a little power supply, it's real handy. And, of course, you want a set of Heil Pro Set 3s, or these are not 3s. These are a Heil Pro Set IC with the Element custom design for ICOM radios. And you'll need an antenna, so we're going to throw in the MFJ cobweb antenna, you know, that new popular antenna covers 20 meters and up. Does 5 bands, and it's small, fits on a small lot, plus coax. So go to amateurlogic.tv/contest, and you'll get all the details on what you need to do to register to win. It's Amateurlogic's 12th anniversary, and we'd like you to help us celebrate. Thanks, ICOM, MFJ, and Heil Sound for making that possible. And speaking of small antennas or not having a lot of room for antennas, we've got our friend Vito, VA3VMD, with us here tonight. Hi, Vito.
Hi, how you doing? Pleased to meet you, and I'm honored to be joined by a great, talented crew over there.
Well, thanks. You ran into Bob recently, and that's how... Well, I guess you made the contact there, and we found out what you're doing antenna-wise. You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. I got into this hobby, and I got my license May 2016, and I was puttering around with what to do with antennas. And, you know, there's so much out there. You can spend so much money out there. You can go crazy. You can go from the minimal, you can go to the max, and you can go nuts. But I wanted to be able to learn in the hobby, so I decided to throw up a little piece of wire, 20 meters, up on my side yard fence, and I kid you not, it's probably, I say it's 10 feet or 12 feet off the ground, but it's really more like, it's probably 8 feet. And I threw that up, and I'm telling you, the thing gets out like gangbusters, to the point where I didn't even want to touch it anymore. So when that happened, I thought to myself, well, wow, what else can I do? So there's my right now you're seeing my 80 meter dipole. That's my 80 meter dipole. And I've actually configured that in an L shape. So the one leg is an L shape. It goes to the pole at the back there. And then it shoots 90 degrees to the other side of the fence. And I thought to myself, is this thing, you know, am I going to get anything out of this? I wasn't sure whether I was going to do it. But before I did this, I actually had it sitting on the fence in that configuration. And believe it or not, I was talking to guys 300 miles away in late afternoon to a couple of guys in Syracuse. And as you know, I'm in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And so there you go. So there's the volleyball net. I call it the volleyball net there. and this is the other leg. So the bottom leg is 80 meters. And the top wire that you see there is actually a 40 meters. So the 40 meters stretches along the back. And then the 80 meters is underneath it. And underneath the clothesline there, I walk. And there's the other leg going 90 degrees to the fence post there. Now, that antenna, I can use without an antenna tuner. I get about a 1.5, 1.7 on the ends of the band, on both ends of 80 meters on sideband, and a flat match at 3,800. And the same thing for 40 meters. I have no more than a 1.7 match on the ends of those antennas. And I use the antenna tuner to kind of, you know, tune it flat. But the less, in my opinion, the less your antenna tuner can do and the more resonant your antennas are, the more effective you're going to be. And again, I haven't been in this hobby for a long time. That's just all she wrote.
Yeah, it works for me. So tell me about the feed point there. Are you using two coaxes, or are they the two elements tied common?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I ended up putting the 40-meter dipole up first, and I ended up doing a Route 66 journey. So by the time I came back, it was late in the fall. And I was thinking of putting something up higher, because I do have the space to go higher here if I really wanted to. But I wanted to get on 80 meters. So what did I do? I threw up the 80 meters. I didn't want to take the chance of impacting the 40-meter dipole. So it is a separate feed point with separate coax going into the shack. Yeah.
Now, I noticed in the video it looked like maybe you had some ferrite beads on the coax there. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I found specifically with the 40-meter band, for some reason, you know, there was my computer speakers picking up a little bit of RF, but nothing in the signal. So what I did, I mean, I could have put a bail-in on the end, but what I did is I put three ferrite chokes just down from the feed point. And then if you noticed on the video, I went a little bit further down and actually coiled some coax, I think about 10 turns of coax or so on each of those feed points before coming into the house. And I also have ferrite chokes on every single cable I have in the shack, just to play it on the safe side. And I've never had any issues with RF in the shack at all. So I'm lucky.
Well, what about neighbors? Do you think they know what it is, or are you getting away with it okay?
Well, let me put it this way. The neighbors have no problems with it, but my friends on 80 meters down in Massachusetts, there's a couple of guys I get together on 80 meters at night. They've kind of classified me as the clothesline kid. And some other ones said Vito has does not have a step IR. He has a step ladder antenna. And as you can see here, I can actually work on these antennas with a stepladder and no problem at all. And as a matter of fact, I've worked Valerie a couple of times when she's done her Facebook streams with all those pileups that she has. I've broken through those pileups no problem, exactly on that 40-meter antenna that you see above that wire there.
Wow. So even though it's low, there's something to be said for resonance, huh?
You know what? Listen, I haven't been in this hobby a very long time, and I think one of the greatest things you can do if you're getting into this hobby is learn. What I did up there is not rocket science. It doesn't take much to do, but it just takes a bit of time and a little bit of patience. As a matter of fact, my first antennas I even did without an analyzer. I used my 7300 because it's got a SWR a plotting graph on it. So I'd come downstairs and I'd go tap, 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 tap and see what my SWR was. But then I kind of invested in one of these, which is an MFJ 207 analyzer, one of the older ones, which I started using that just so I didn't have to go up and down in the house all the time. And I got myself a little frequency counter so I could see exactly, where the antenna was resonant on frequency. And this is an example of the, basically what I did. It's there's the feed point. There's the feed point, and it's 12 gauge speaker wire, folks. It's nothing fancy. 12 gauge speaker wire. That's it.
Wow. And you just tied the two together there. So it's,
yeah, what I did is I shorted the, each leg, the two wires, on each separate leg are actually shorted together on the ends. So they're effectively, acting as one physical wire instead of two separate leads. Yeah.
Okay. What I see your radio behind you there on the display. What kind of radio do you use?
I was fortunate enough to purchase an ICOM 7300. I've had it for almost the full time that I've been an amateur operator. I also run Kenwood 480 HX in the vehicle. I don't really use it that often, except when I do my long trips. As you can see behind me, I have traveled Route 66. If you go to my QRZ page, you'll see I think I did 17 states in 21 days, I think, doing Route 66 and back. So I enjoyed using that when I'm on the road and specifically for those trips. But at home, I'm sold on the 7300. I mean, it's just a fabulous radio.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. You know, I've had my hands on it. Matter of fact, I got my hands on one right now. I'm not going to be able to keep this one, though. But it's really a great radio. I've used these at field day and various times. And, you know, and in the class it's in, I don't know anything else really that competes with it at this time. Well, Vito, thanks for coming by tonight and telling us a little bit about your antennas there and how you can actually get good performance on a fairly easy-to-build antenna that doesn't take a lot of room.
Absolutely. And on closing, George, I want to thank you guys. I really appreciate for you having us on. And us Canadians up in Canada, by the way, I can speak for all of us here that our prayers are with our neighbors down south, both in Texas and in Florida and right across the board. And tell Bob next time he comes to Toronto that I've got a nice purple tie for him, because I know he loves his purple. So so I want to make sure, Bob, that tie is for you. So next time you come down here, we'll pass it on to you.
All right. Thanks, Vito. And yeah, he may just make a special trip up there just to get the tie.
That's great. Well, listen, thanks a lot, George. I really appreciate it. And God bless to all of you and take care.
All right. 7-3. Well, you know, last week I asked a question on here dealing with frequency and wavelengths, and it was, what is the formula for converting a frequency to a wavelength? Well, you know, I got all kind of answers on that one. Unfortunately, an awful lot of them were wrong. They were either giving me right the opposite, how to convert a wavelength to a frequency, which is not what I wanted, or giving me some other formulas about frequency and wavelength that really were much more complicated than what I was looking for. But Tom Alisi, K1TA, knew the answer. And this is the one that we use in amateur radio so often. And this is one you'll know if you've ever taken an exam, or you should have. To convert frequency to wavelength, Tom says 300 divided by the frequency in megahertz. That'll give it to you right there. If you want to do the opposite, convert wavelength to frequency, then 300 divided by wavelength in meters. So there you go. Just remember, the wavelength is in meters, the frequency is in megahertz, and the number 300. Pretty easy there. Well, congratulations, Tom. We're going to send you one of Gordo's books. Take your pick here, technician, general, or extra. And if you're already an extra, well, maybe you want to get a technician and give it to someone that you want to help get into the hobby, or maybe help a technician upgrade to a general or a general to an extra. Thanks, Gordo, for supplying those for us. I'm going to pick a question out of the, out of his general book tonight. What factor or factors affect the MUF? M-U-F. And, you know, I don't think to tell you what MUF stands for on the question here. So, you know, if you got it on your test, you're just going to have to know what that is, because I'm not going to give it away. But if you think you know the answer, your choices are path, distance, and location, or time of day and season, or solar radiation and ionospheric disturbances, or all of those choices are correct. Send your answer to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win one of these right here. It's a DX Engineering tote bag. It's a heavy-duty canvas bag. You know, this is the one I use right here for all my outdoor amateur activities, field day, whatever. I carry my coax and extension cords in here. And, you know, it is very rugged, very heavy-duty bag. Not like one of those little shopping bags that you see around. So a great prize there from DX Engineering. Thanks for supplying that for us, guys. answer that question, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could win. Well, next up here, I think we've got, well, we still got Don here, don't we?
Yes, and George, contrary to popular opinion, MUF does not stand for my ugly face, okay? I'm just putting that out there. Do with that information what you will. Does not stand for my ugly face. Let's talk about Hover, shall we? Because whatever you're passionate about, you probably want to make a website for it. Is it for your business? Is it for a hobby? Is it for whatever? Whatever your passion is, maybe you're launching a creative project. Buying a domain name is the first and biggest step to building your brand online, because without that online brand, for personal or for business, you really have nothing, because that is the hook to which people come to you by on your website. So are you interested in, I don't know, photography, dance, pizza, ham radio, whatever your interest may be? Hover has hundreds of extensions to choose from. Just a few of them here. They have .yoga, .photo, .racing, .organic. With Hover, you get a personalized email address as well that matches your domain and further supports your online identity. You know what else is great about Hover? Well, they have the Connect feature, the Hover Connect feature that allows you to connect your domain name to any host or website builder with just a few simple clicks. It's a clean user interface. There's no upsells. They have a free Whois privacy and best-in-class customer support team. Show the online community who you are and what you're passionate about, even if it's my ugly face. Go to hover.com/twit and get 10% off your first purchase. Hover.com. That's H-O-V-E-R, just like it sounds. Hover.com/twit. And Hover, we thank you so much for your support of Ham Nation. No ugly faces now, because we've got Amanda with the chat room. Hello, Amanda.
Well, good evening. Actually, there's two lovelies here tonight, by the way. But first, I just want to say, I use your ugly mug all the time. I put it on my fridge. I keep the roaches away. It works.
Exactly.
It's a win-win.
That's right. That's right. Thanks, well-based exterminating.
That's scary. All right. Let's welcome Dr. T back with us. I have a lot of great questions for her. So the first one, Dr. T is with us, right?
There she is.
There you are. Hello. Okay. The first one is a personal question. First of all, I saw you tweet after the eclipse. You said you were so happy that most people didn't notice that you were kind of getting choked up over seeing the live eclipse. And I thought that was so cool. And it's great that you still see things that are just... they're phenomenal to you as well. So my question personally is, what other events in the solar activities would make you get choked up like that? You know, maybe the comet or the next solar eclipse, what?
Well, I will say the next solar eclipse is going to be fantastic, because that will be during solar maximum. And unlike this solar max, we have a very quiet, well, not today, but we've had a very quiet solar corona, so the atmosphere around the sun hasn't really looked all that spectacular. But in 2024, we could actually see stuff spitting off the corona in all different directions. So that would be, you know, very spectacular and definitely make me choke up again. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I think one of the things that really got me choked up was the very first time that I saw aurora around Jupiter, and we saw that some of Jupiter's moons had magnetic shields like Earth does. And if you could imagine the idea of seeing a moon with aurora around the moon, and that aurora connected to the aurora around the host planet, and seeing that kind of lover's, you know, almost like a maybe a mother and child kind of connection, or a lover's connection, it was very magical and mystical to me. And so I always look up at our own moon now and just imagine if we had a magnetic shield around that moon, you could look up at night, even if you couldn't see aurora in your own skies, you could look up at the moon and see aurora. So that has always kind of held a particular kind of mystery and magic to me, that there are other bodies, even in our own solar system, that are just mesmerizing. And we will get a chance to travel to them probably sooner than we realize.
And thank you for that. Seeing aurora on a different moon, planet's moon, that's great. Thank you for that. So you actually answered two questions in one, because someone else asked, how is the next eclipse in 2024 going to be different? You're saying that we're going to see a whole lot more with that. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's going to be a radically different solar eclipse. just because the corona is going to be much more unstable. A lot of the predictions, I don't know if you guys ever followed some of the NASA press releases, but there's a company called Predictive Science. They're colleagues of mine, and they actually did a full prediction of what the corona would look like from some of the solar models that we use in our field. And their prediction was pretty good. All things considered, it was actually very, very surprising how close they actually got to what it really looked like in the sky. The only difference was that there was a storm, a solar storm that launched from the east side of the disk off this direction. And sure enough, there was one actually that launched that way and one that launched northward. And that both of those parts of the eclipse, the corona looked different than the predictions. So it's going to be a lot harder to do this in 2024 with a lot more solar storms and a lot more activity. So there's going to be a much bigger buzz around it, I'm sure, especially in my community.
Very good. Well, thank you for that. I will be hosting a party in 2045 when I'm 68 years old because it's going right over our town. All right. Just an FYI for everyone. All right. Another question, and I saw this a couple times in the chat room, is this X flare that we just had, is it interfering? Is it doing anything with the hurricanes that we're having right now? Does it have any impact whatsoever?
Yeah, this right here, it's not having a direct impact. A lot of people ask me that question. Does solar storms affect Earth weather? Solar storms and any type of sun activity, solar activity, affects Earth climate, but not weather. Weather is too fast. Too many things going on at once. It's far more driven by processes in Earth itself. The solar variability is much slower, even though you have these types of bursts. You might affect a little bit when it comes to cloud cover with the solar radiation storms. That does affect things like, I know cosmic rays affects how much cloud cover you can get, but it's not going to affect how strong a hurricane is. And I won't go any further than that because that begins to get into climate science, and it's hard.
Okay, well, we do not want to touch those subjects of climate science or climate change. We will not. Oh, right. Another question for you, though, completely different altogether. What kind of equipment do you guys use to be able to view the sun?
Well, my favorite equipment of choice, of course, are solar telescopes that are space-based. We do a lot of viewing on the, on the ground, but the problem is that the atmosphere is very turbulent. And all those thermal changes and stuff like that, just like when you see a mirage on the ground and you see the heat waves bubbling up, we get the same problem when we're trying to stare at the sun. As a matter of fact, one of the best observatories for the solar observations of sunspots like this is at Big Bear Solar Observatory. And the reason for that is because they're surrounded. If you've ever been to that observatory, they're absolutely out on the lake. They're surrounded by water, and that water, this big body of water, kind of helps stabilize the temperature above the, in the atmosphere just above the telescope itself. So that makes a big difference in terms of trying to quiet that atmospheric mess that's there. But my best love is the ones that we launch out into space, because then there's no atmosphere to block us. We have to have ones that are close to Earth like this to be able to get these gorgeous pictures down. The ones like stereo that are on the backside of the sun, we don't get as good of pictures from them, though, because it's the telemetry is so difficult. So we have to make the pictures a lot lower quality and that type of thing. So that does hinder some of the science we can do. But we're working on better types of communications to be able to up that and have pictures like this all the time.
Very good. Now, that's all the questions I had. George, Don, did you guys have any questions for Tamitha tonight?
Oh, gee.
Go ahead, George.
No. I think you answered everything great. And, being able to tie what we're seeing here, with lack of propagation or good propagation to scientific evidence there just really, brings it home, helps us better to understand how this works.
Yeah, I concur with that, and it was amazing to see all the science, the citizen science that was done by ham operators with the ham sci people as well, with studying the ionosphere along with the eclipse and everything else, and And dovetailing that with all of the stuff that that you talk about, Tamitha, is incredible. And you've taught me, I think, in all of us, I think I can speak for all of us here, including in the chat room and people who watch. You've taught us more just in the few years you've been involved with us than years and years and years of trying to read it out of a book. So for everybody, thank you so much for being on our team.
Agreed.
We're fortunate. We're so fortunate to have you.
You're very welcome. And it's honestly, it's not that that this stuff is all that incredibly complicated, at least from a conceptual point of view. It's just a matter of figuring out the right language to kind of make it intuitive. This stuff is something that everybody can grasp. And honestly, you amateur radio operators, you can grasp it far better than even a science enthusiast, a space enthusiast, simply because you guys have these engineering backgrounds. You understand a bit about radio frequency propagation and stuff like that, and charged, electromagnetism. I mean, that's a very difficult concept for most because they can't see it, right? You can't see magnetic fields. So you guys are a wonderful audience to be able to talk to, and everything is so connected that as soon as I talk about something here, you guys feel it over there. And that seeing that real time, interplay between the science and the actual application of it is very gratifying to me. So I am thrilled to be part of the team.
Somebody in the chat room is asking about Halley's Comet, and I think that's not necessarily in your wheelhouse, but anything you can share about Halley's Comet coming back?
In particular, what about the question? I mean, there's a lot of things about Halley's Comet. It's not particularly exciting. That comet is, it's got a nice coma. It's gonna, have a neat view around the sun, but it's nothing that, I guess I just don't understand what the question would be about regarding the comet.
Yeah, well, KC3DRC is the one who poses it, and the question is, what about Halley's Comet? So I think you covered it. That was the question.
Well, there is one cool thing. I will tell you this. There's one cool thing, and you'll have to search the web to find it because I wouldn't have it up right now. But comets are so fun to watch when there's a solar storm that goes by because you get something called tail disruption. And it's like ripping the tail off a gecko. The comet tail goes bloop, and you watch it just kind of disappear. And then the comet regrows its tail right as you watch it. So when the solar storm goes by, it absolutely just strips that like just like a little kid ripping the tail off the gecko. And then the comet has to grow it back. So a lot of fun.
That's a frightening mental picture. See, this is why we love you, because you can make us understand all of this stuff. So I don't have any more questions, and unless anybody else has any more questions, I think probably that's a good place to stop, because now we're tearing the tails off of geckos.
Now everybody's kids are gonna go cry. Good job.
That's right. Wow. Oh, my.
But we're talking about being intuitive. Well, see, you don't mess with solar storms. You mess with solar storms. You're going to get your tail ripped off.
Well, I think we all know how uncomfortable that can be. And on that note, thank you so much for being on with us live tonight and giving us all of this great information and well, everything else, too. We appreciate you so much. And hopefully we'll do another ladies' night show here pretty soon, because we need to have you two. We need to have you two back. Well, let's go the other way. We need to have you two back in charge again one of these nights.
That was a really fun time.
Mm-hmm. It was fun. Amanda, do you know where the Nets are tonight?
I absolutely do. Let's see. We are on 14280, a little bit different frequency for us tonight. Find that 7192. We have TAC 311, D-Star 14, Charlie. By the way, I just want to say something about D-Star. You guys, come up with an emergency frequency that you want to use for emergency activities like the hurricanes. I think that would be really beneficial to have just one channel for that. Just moving on. All right. Do drop in EchoLink. That's where we're at. And I'll try to be on a bunch of those tonight.
Good. One final question from the chat room, and this will put a bow on it. K8VGL Jerry says, Dr. T, how are the satellites protected from these storms, these solar storms?
Good question.
Actually, they're not, other than us people like me helping design in safeguards for these things. So we have redundant systems. Oftentimes we have radiation hardness, but oftentimes we get it wrong. And we will have satellites and instruments that will shut down. As a matter of fact, coronagraphs, it's very classic. What we call a blizzard is when we get a big solar radiation storm blast from the sun and it hits these imagers and all you see is snow for a short while. This type of thing, it's when basically particles are hitting the CCD of the cameras, and that causes issues for us. We also have spacecraft that will actually just turn off. They'll safe themselves, and sometimes we can't get them back. There's all sorts of things that can go wrong and are issues because of the space weather that's out there. So we just basically have to design it in and then pray.
Very good. Well, thanks again for being with us tonight live. That's such a treat. We certainly appreciate everything you do. And also the rest of our guests tonight, Vito, with his amazing, very low antennas. And that's the beauty about wire antennas. You don't have to put them up right or by the book. You just have to put them up. And also Marty from the American Legion. Great stuff. Bob's Pine Board, everything else. Gordon, thank you as well. We are way over time, but it's worth it because we've had some amazing information tonight. And again, our hearts and prayers go out to not only those still in Texas who were dealing with the aftermath of Harvey. And, you know, I was in Katrina. I know what that's like. And those people who are having to deal now and will be dealing with Irma, again, just unprecedented. Literally, it's a meteorological buzzsaw. So all of you folks are in our prayers. And if you can help, by all means, help. If it's getting on the radio and helping out with the Hurricane Watch Net, or if it's just getting and donating money to whatever charity of your choice that's going to do the most good for those people down there. Any of us just sitting around and praying, just do that. If that's all you can do, that helps. So for all of you in the path of the storm tonight, we're with you and we're thinking of you and we're praying for you as well. So for all of us here on Ham Nation, thank you all so much. We appreciate you and we will see you all next week. So good night, everybody.
Good night.